Good morning. I call to order the House Education Finance Committee. And with that, why don't we go right to the minutes? Does Representative Purcell, Representative Edelson, have you had a chance to look at the minutes for March 14th?
Yes, Madam Chair, and I'll move those minutes.
Thank you. Representative Edelson moves the minutes for March 14th. Are there any questions on the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. The minutes are adopted. And with that, I am going to go over to the testifiers table. Members, we have the Governor's Education Finance Bill before us today. And we are going to go through the presentation from the Governor's office. And then we have a list of testifiers. And then I really hope that we have a robust discussion about the bill, and I'm going to turn the gavel over to Representative Clardy.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. Our next agenda item is House File 2497. Chair Joachim, would you like to move House File 2497 before the committee with the intention to lay over the bill for possible inclusion in the Ed Finance Bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, that would be my intention.
Great. You may begin your presentation.
Awesome. As soon as I get to it. There we go. Thank you, Chair Clardy, and thank you, Education Finance Committee members. Like I said, this is the Governor's Education Finance Bill. As many of you know, it's customary to hear the Governor and Lieutenant Governor's proposal for discussion. That is why we're here today. There are individual proposals in this bill that members have already brought forward to the committee or will be bringing forward. And there are pieces in this bill that will be considered for inclusion in our Education Finance Committee. I will have a variety of testifiers from MDE walk through the bill, then we'll be taking testimony from folks that signed up, and then finally I'll have what I hope is a robust discussion around the provisions in the bill. I'm looking for constructive feedback that our committee can take into consideration as we move forward. With that, I will turn it over to Chief of Staff from the Minnesota Department of Education, Stephanie Graff.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Joachim. Ms. Graff, will you please state your name for the record?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity again to come before the House Education Finance Committee to discuss the Governor's Education Budget Bill. My name is Stephanie Graff. I'm Chief of Staff for the Minnesota Department of Education. Next slide. As a reminder, it is always essential to center ourselves in Minnesota's 10 commitments to equity. We've included them here for your convenience, and I know that these are familiar because we've always grounded our presentations in these 10 commitments. Next slide. The Governor and Lieutenant Governor's education vision is laid out in the Due North Education Plan, which is centered on ensuring every child in Minnesota receives a high-quality education, no matter their race or zip code. This plan, and what we will discuss today, is focused on ensuring every single student in Minnesota receives a world-class education, that students learn in safe and nurturing environments, and that every student is taught by caring and qualified educators. We're also focused on expanding access for students of color and Indigenous students and students in greater Minnesota. Next slide. We believe that with this historic surplus, we have the opportunity to transform Minnesota's public education system and deliver the opportunities that our students so desperately deserve. As you know, the governor proposes $6.9 billion to fund a range of initiatives. The initiatives include a focus on academic outcomes and academic excellence for all students across the state, early childhood efforts, making sure that we're giving our youngest children a great start. Access to student and family engagement opportunities, making sure that we're meeting the mental health needs of our students, American Indian education, creating more welcoming teaching and learning environments, making sure, again, that our students are able to come to school every day and experience their education in safe and nurturing classroom environments. Reimagining the secondary school experience so that we are sure that we are providing students with opportunities that really truly prepare them for whatever comes after high school, whether that be college, career, and making sure that they're put on a path for success for life. Supporting the educator workforce, particularly making sure that we're focused on efforts to make sure our teachers in front of our students every day, reflect the diverse student populations that we serve, and also really leaning in and making sure that we're addressing the challenges that we continue to hear from our school communities related to educator workforce shortages. And then also making sure that we're increasing agency capacity for us at the Minnesota Department of Education to lead and guide, along with and in partnership with our school leaders and school communities across the state to serve students every single day. Next slide. While the presentation today will focus on some selected topics, this slide is a reminder of the many highlights that you will find in the bill in front of you that we won't be touching upon in the presentation, but certainly we have a team here that stand ready to answer any questions that you might have on other areas that we won't dive into today in the presentation. Next slide. Today, the team will focus on six items in more detail. First, we'll start with our bold literacy plan, a comprehensive approach to enhancing our students' literacy outcomes. Then we'll talk a little bit more about Compass and multi-tiered systems of supports, really leaning into making sure that we're providing evidence-based approaches and resources to meet the diverse needs of all students. We'll talk about career and technical education access and grant opportunities that are included in the governor's budget. Paid student teaching, making sure that we're providing on-the-job paid training for our teachers during their 12-week student teaching period. And lastly, a new Office of Inspector General that we're proposing for the Minnesota Department of Education. We'll briefly touch on teacher mentoring, targeted special education funding, and audit and internal control enhancements at MDE as well. With me today, we have a fantastic team. We have Assistant Commissioners Bobby Burnham, Angela Mansfield, and Darren Cordy to present on some of these targeted topics. And then we also have other staff here, including our finance staff, if there are any further questions. And with that, I'll hand it over to Assistant Commissioner Bobby Burnham.
Thank you, Stephanie Graff. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Bobby Burnham, and I serve as the Assistant Commissioner for the Office of Teaching and Learning at the Department of Education. The first proposal I will talk about today is our BOLD birth through grade 12 plan for literacy achievement. BOLD seeks to have every child reading at or above grade level no later than the end of third grade every year, beginning in kindergarten. The goal of BOLD is to increase access to effective literacy experiences for all students with a focus on those most underserved by ensuring school leaders and educators are trained in and implement evidence-based structured literacy practices, effectively implement and measure instructional practices through a multi-tiered system of support, utilize data literacy to inform instruction, educator development, and resource deployment and policy, and employ intentional family and community engagement strategies. Included in this proposal is the redirection or the use of the literacy incentive aid to implement comprehensive literacy reform efforts based on the components in the revised BOLD legislation, offer free training opportunities through the establishment of regional training networks, and build coaching capacity through an MDE partnership with the Minnesota Service Cooperatives. These regional networks will provide quality, job-embedded professional learning and coaching on structured literacy practices to educators, school leaders, and site-based coaches. We propose to expand a literacy lab model, which is a partnership with institutions of higher ed and teacher candidates who will offer tutoring to students not reading at grade level while building their education practice. Improve the data collection and reporting system that will include dyslexia screening and kindergarten through grade 3 data and pre-kindergarten data. Provide continued financial supports to state library services to expand their work on early literacy development in community and school libraries. This would involve training staff on evidence-based early literacy practices in both public libraries as well as school libraries. And and then financial support to some key partners, Reach Out and Read, Minnesota Reading Corps in the Bridge to Read program, and our Parent to Child Plus program. Next slide. The Minnesota Multi-Tiered Systems of Support Encompass proposal. This is to support the development and implementation of the Minnesota MTSS framework and the Collaborative Minnesota Partnerships to Advance Student Success Compass School Improvement Model. MDE proposes to continue offering school districts and charter schools training and support in implementing MTSS through the MDE Compass team and regional partners, the Minnesota Service Co-ops. Compass is the state school improvement model, providing a statewide system through which all districts and schools may receive support in the areas of literacy, math, social-emotional learning, and mental health within the multi-tiered system of support framework. The MTSS framework is the state's systemic continuous school improvement framework for ensuring positive social, emotional, behavioral, developmental, and academic outcomes for every student. MTSS provides access to layered tiers of culturally and linguistically responsive evidence-based practices. The MTSS framework relies on the understanding and belief that every student can learn and thrive, and it engages an anti-bias and socially just approach to examining policies and practices in ensuring equitable distributions of resources and opportunities. Funds will allow the expansion of the Compass regional implementation work, as well as support the development of the regional network focused on math in partnership with the Minnesota Service Cooperatives, grants to school districts to support implementation of MTSS through Compass, and grants to our partners for evaluation, and a grant to BAR, Building Assets Reducing Risk, to expand their services statewide. That is all I have, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner Burnham. And our next testifier, please state your name for the record.
Wonderful. Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Angela Mansfield. I'm Assistant Commissioner at Minnesota Department of Education. And I am going to talk to you this morning about career and technical education access. And there are three important components of this expansion. Direct access to grants into the system, support for teacher mentorship and retention efforts, and then also fortifying the state's capacity to amplify the success of those grants that are going out to districts. Why is this important? Well, the Minnesota workforce is experiencing an employment gap, disparities for underrepresented populations, and misalignment between talent and skills. There's a clear alignment to business and community partners through this expansion who are echoing a need for a renewed commitment to increase funding and support to expand and or establish CTE programming across the state. And there's not currently any state funds directly aimed at incentivizing CTE expansion and growth. So for students who complete CTE programming, they're more than likely to be employed in the region that programming was completed. They're more confident, they're more familiar, they have that real real life world work experience, and they gain that experience, that network, and real industry work. This also improves equitable access to different career pathways for them and sustainable wages throughout that longevity of their commitment for their families. Some numbers to consider while you're looking at this. In Minnesota, we have 338 districts of our 520 plus that currently have programs, so we have a lot of space there for expansion. And those programs exist. We have a lot of room for health sciences and the service occupation, and there's room for growth in what that is. And then also we have combined female and male 202,000 students that are enrolled currently in CTE programming across the state. Also a lot of room to improve that. And so if we look at who attends those that programming, we also have to look at who teaches in that space. And so you'll see in the components of the grant, a large portion is going out to grants to schools and charters, but then $2.5 million is going to efforts around teacher mentorship, retention, licensure support for Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers. And in that, that's really looking at how can we get the best quality teachers in those positions and make sure that we're retaining them and making sure that the people in front of our students are ready and prepared for that work. And then also at our lovely MDE, making sure the team there is best equipped and able to help those teachers out in the field and the districts out in the field be able to support the folks that are in front of our students every single day. So building up the state's capacity to be able to provide that technical assistance, the program approval, and the connections needed out to the field. Next slide, please. The next piece I'm going to talk to you about paid student teaching, again, lifting up what we need desperately in our field right now, that pipeline into our teaching profession. There's great barrier for our teachers who are going into the profession. They are having to, part of that practicum experience is going to student teaching time, and that is an extra semester for them where they are unpaid and having to have that time in the classroom and get that very important experience. This, through this piece of legislation, it is suggested that those teachers get a $5,000 stipend, so while they are paying for the semester they have to do in the classroom, they are lowering the barriers to living, the cost of living that they still have to pay for while they're in front of students. So approximately 2,500 student teachers, $5,000 stipend for them, it would be about that $29.3 million each biennium. That would be paid internships. It also would vary based on the number of student teachers that we have. This is based on a number out of PELSD's data summary report in the 2020-21 timeframe. Any student teaching candidate who is in that semester of student teaching would be eligible if in their first teaching license that they're applying for. And then it would be a partnership between MDE working with PELSB and MASBO to create those parameters. Who qualifies for the stipend, how much the stipend would be, varied based on the amount of student teachers that we had, and then the procedures for those host districts to award those stipends out to the student teachers who are requesting for reimbursements, along with the monitoring and the compliance measures. And I believe that would be it. And I'll pass it over to my partner.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner Mansfield.
Thank you.
And please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Darren Cordy. I'm an Assistant Commissioner for the Office of Student Support Services at the Department of Education. Here to talk about a few different proposals. First, the Office of the Inspector General at MDE. Under our current state laws and regulations, MDE has very limited ability to investigate fraud, waste, or misuse of public dollars. The only real authority that we have is around special education complaints and complaints about student maltreatment. We do hire and employ fiscal monitors and auditors, but those auditors are not trained investigators. They do different work than investigations. So if MDE suspects any fraud, waste, or wrongdoing or misuse of public dollars, really our only recourse is to go to another state or federal agency and rely upon them to do the investigation for us. And even if an investigation is launched, we don't have much insight in terms of what the investigation looks like, who's being investigated, the evidence that's being collected, or any actions that are going to be taken until pretty much they become public. So this makes it very difficult for us at MDE to act swiftly, to shut down programs and stop making payments if we suspect wrongdoing. As you know, many large state agencies, namely the Department of Human Services, have a state agency level office of the Inspector General that investigates fraud and other wrongdoing within its programs. E12 education in Minnesota compromises over a third of the state's budget, so we think that it's necessary to have an Inspector General at MDE. We believe it's an essential component of our internal controls and risk management to have trained investigators in-house operating independently who have the authority to conduct investigations, make findings, work with appropriate law enforcement and civil authorities. So this proposal would provide $2 million annually to fund an internal Office of the Inspector General at MDE. The proposal funds 10 new FTEs, which would include one Inspector General, a Deputy Inspector General, and up to 8 Assistant Inspector Generals. The funding would cover the salary and fringe benefits of those positions, as well as the resources necessary to operate the office, such as travel, technologies, supplies, and other services such as forensic accounting. The authority to manage the office would lie with the Inspector General, and they would be independent from agency leadership in order to maintain the independence of the office and the accountability for the agency. The office would conduct routine monitoring of all of MDE's programs to uncover risks for potential fraud or other wrongdoing, with an emphasis on programs with large budgets and those programs that provide funding to non-governmental entities. If evidence of potential fraud or wrongdoing is uncovered, the office would conduct in-depth investigations and work in partnership with state, local, and federal law enforcement agencies, as well as the Minnesota Attorney General's Office and the Office of the United States Attorney, to ensure that the fraud, waste, or misuse is ended and that federal and state funds are recouped and the wrongdoers are subject to the appropriate level of criminal and civil penalties. Go to the next slide, please. Another piece, skipping around here. This piece is around special education. I'll speak shortly to this because you did hear this in our previous presentation. But we are asking for some funding to increase funding for sites and programs serving setting for special education facilities or higher. These are facilities that serve the highest needs students with disabilities that we have in our state, and we have repeatedly heard from them about the challenges that they meet financially in order to provide the services that are needed for these students. So this would provide some additional funding at a per pupil formula level to those students who are being served in a federal special education setting 4 or higher. Another piece is around extending funding for special education services until students reach age 22. We believe that this is something the state needs to do to be in compliance with federal regulations. Recently, several federal courts of appeals have held that students need to be offered special education services until they turn age 22, unless those services are being cut off for other students in the state. And since we offer adult basic education in the state, those courts have held that essentially we would not be in compliance with federal regulations if this is challenged in court, and it is being challenged in court. So this would provide special education services until the day a student turns age 22, as opposed to the end of the school year in which they turn 21, which is how our current statute works. The funding here would cover the additional cost of special education services for those students, and since they would continue to be full-time students and operate or generate ADM, that it would also cover the general education expenses for those students. I believe our last slide has another piece around around program integrity and ensuring that we're doing what we can to make sure that we're being accountable as a state agency for the funding that we administer. There are several state laws and best practices that are set forth requiring audits, internal controls, and internal auditing functions. With over 325 school districts, 184 charter schools, 4 intermediate districts, and several other cooperative units that we serve and that serve students, there's over 500 LEAs that should be audited on a regular basis. However, under our current capacity, we have 3 full-time equivalent employees that complete an average of about 29 audits per year over the last fiscal years. So if you average that out, that means that schools and school districts and charter schools are only audited about once every 20 years on average. With the increased funding, The increased funding for school finance audit activities would enhance financial accountability by increasing the number of audits each year and reducing the average length of time between audits. Improving the mix of audits to include a more proportional representation of LEAs and expand the scope of the audits to include a wider range of data. And then the last piece is around statewide teacher mentoring. As you heard Assistant Commissioner Mansfield talked about, we have several proposals around increasing teacher quality and increasing the pool of teachers that are out there, but we also want to make sure that teachers that are entering the field remain in the field and continue to learn and become high quality as they move along. So we're proposing $9.94 million one time to expand our teacher mentoring program to improve the experiences of early career teachers, to teachers that are new to buildings, and Indigenous teachers and teachers of color so that they remain in the profession as professional educators. We are currently doing some of this work already under federal American Recovery Plan funds, but those expire in September of 2024, so we'd like to continue this work with state-funded grants to regional partners, grants to districts, and contracts with national content experts to develop a teacher induction model. I believe that is the last of our slides.
Great. Thank you, Assistant Commissioner Corte. Rep. Kreisha, I see you have a question. Would you, we have a lot of testifiers. Could you hold on to it until we get into that?
I do have one specifically to the last two slides. So however you'd like to do it, Madam Chair.
So we'll come back to testimonies, or we'll come back to questions after testimonies. So, thank you. Our next piece is public testimony, and we've asked public testifiers to limit their comments to 2 minutes per person. I'm going to just announce that the first three, and the first one up will be Laura Mogelson. And then next on deck would be Susan Thompson and then Josh Donham. So if you're all welcome to come up to the table. And Ms. Mogelson, will you please state your name for the record before you begin?
My name is Laura Mogelson, and I'm from the Minnesota Association of Colleges of Teacher Education. Chair Clardy and members of the committee, we're testifying today to share our strong support for the provision in House File 2497 that provides funds to pay student teachers. There is no debate about the value and necessity of the student teaching experience. Student teaching allows a teacher candidate to synthesize the learning from their teacher prep program, connect theory to practice, and hone the complex skill set needed to be a successful teacher. New teachers regularly report student teaching as the most valuable learning in their preparation. The unpaid student teaching model favors those with more resources. This can be an excluding factor for people with a low income background, which in turn contributes to the lack of diversity in our teacher workforce. During their full-time unpaid student teaching, candidates often need to find additional part-time work to make ends meet. Candidates also report food and housing insecurities during this time. This creates significant stress that impacts their learning and their teaching. Research demonstrates that the quality of the student teaching experience significantly impacts the effectiveness of new teachers. When teacher candidates are holding down multiple jobs and struggling with their well-being, their professional development and future effectiveness are negatively impacted. Unpaid student teaching is based on an outdated model of teacher education in which teachers complete student teaching in their final year of full-time college while being supported by their family. This is not the reality for the vast majority of our student teachers. 3 months of unpaid work undervalues the teaching profession as a whole and signals to many teachers that they are expected to suffer to enter this profession. Removing the barrier of unpaid student teaching will help us to solve the teacher shortage as well, while opening up the teaching profession to a more diverse candidate pool. We urge you to support the funding of paid student teaching in House File 2497. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mogelson. The next testifier will be Susan Thompson. Please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Susan Thompson, and I'm the Senior Strategic Analyst for Serve Minnesota, our state's AmeriCorps Commission. My work is centered around Minnesota Reading Corps and Bridge to Read. Today, I'm testifying in support of the governor's proposal to expand Bridge to Read to support more of our school teachers. Bridge to Read is a set of instructional tools along with coaching to support teachers. Bridge to Read provides explicit, systematic reading instruction on foundational reading skills for students in kindergarten through third grade. Bridge to Read materials give teachers a bridge to transfer their professional knowledge about reading into actual evidence-based classroom instruction. Bridge to Read is not a curriculum, but it's a set of tools that complements the reading curriculum that is already in place at schools. We at Serve Minnesota share Bridge to Read through different partnerships. In our partnership with the Minnesota Department of Education, we provide Bridge to Read access to over 900 educators with weekly virtual coaching support. In addition, we also partner directly with 20 metro and greater Minnesota schools. Currently, we cannot reach all the teachers and school districts who have expressed interest in Bridge to Read because we lack the funds to scale the program. The governor's proposed funding would allow Bridge to Read to expand our capacity to support many more educators. In closing, I want to express my appreciation and gratitude to Representative Edelson for her leadership on the READ Act and to the Minnesota Department of Education for their strong work on the Bold Literacy Plan. As you develop this committee's final literacy package, I hope you will include funding to expand access to Bridge to Read to more teachers. And separate from my Bridge to Read comment, I simply want to mention that in your meeting packet today, there's a letter from the Higher Education Literacy Partnership, which I co-lead in strong support of the Bold Literacy Plan. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Thomas. Thompson. Thompson, yeah. Our next testifier is Josh Downham. And then next up on deck would be Annie Christensen.
Great.
State your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Josh Downham, Minneapolis Public Schools. And first and foremost, I want to thank the governor and lieutenant governor for a very strong bill. I've been at this now for 9 years, and this is the best set of education recommendations put forward in those 9 years. So thank you, Governor. Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. And the three areas, I'm going to start kind of high level, but get into a couple specific changes I'd love to see incorporated in the bill. But certainly the focus on special education, English learners, and linking the Gen Ed formula to inflation. Those are three critical pieces in this bill. And I think the governor's proposal on special ed is a great start, reaching 50% of the cross subsidy. I would love to see that phased in so that we can get up to a more significant piece of that cross subsidy. Similarly, on the EL formula, Representative Herr's bill, which looks at it from a cross subsidy standpoint, I think is a really strong proposal, and we can blend that with the governor's bill as well. And then obviously linking the formula to inflation is critical so we don't backslide like we have the last 20 years. The one last piece I'll also call out is the voluntary pre-K extension and the mixed delivery model, which I think is a great early learning piece that we need to include in the final bill. Two specific changes I would love to see in Article 4, Section 3, they include foster care transportation as a reimbursable expense, which I think is a great piece. We would love to see homeless highly mobile elevated because right now there's about 120 districts across the state that only receive half of their HHM transportation costs covered because they fall into the special ed hold harmless. Ensuring that all districts have that would be great. And then the final piece relates to Article 4, Section 8, and that is for those programs, those level 4 programs, that the bill allows additional funding for intermediates and co-ops. I think that should be available for all level 4 programs across the state. appreciate the extra time, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. The next up is Ann Christensen. Please state your name for the record, and then Catherine Myers will be up on deck.
Hello, and thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, for allowing me to provide testimony on behalf of statewide MTSS. My name is Annie Christensen. I'm a school psychologist in Robbinsdale Area Schools and a member of the Minnesota School Psychologists Association. As mentioned earlier, Multi-Tiered Systems of Support, or MTSS, is a systematic, data-driven improvement framework for ensuring positive social, emotional, behavioral, and academic outcomes for every student. Wisconsin focused its energy toward MTSS. As a result, they observed significant academic growth and reductions in behavioral issues, as well as gains in administrative and instructional time. It's also important to acknowledge the long-term fiscal benefits for society if we invest in MTSS. By proactively contributing to student achievement now, we can reduce the number of social resources these students may need later in life. Additionally, we could prevent a child from needing special education services, as well as better identify students with disabilities if we have the infrastructure in place to identify skill deficits and provide the individualized targeted support to reduce those gaps. Our current system is unsustainable. We are under-resourced and understaffed, requiring us to prioritize students based on the intensity of their needs. Every student deserves attention and care, but too often I must choose between my students. Rarely do I support students with academic skill building, even though 63% of my students aren't meeting reading standards and 86.4% aren't meeting math standards. Rather, I spend days helping students meet their basic needs by helping them with their self-regulation. I consult with families whose child is experiencing a mental health emergency. I complete suicide risk assessments and threat assessments, hoping that I don't lose a student. We can't intervene our way out of this. However, we can strategically allocate resources to expand capacity to sustainably implement MTSS. We can do this with your consideration of the provision in House File 2497 in support of statewide MTSS. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, Catherine Myers, and then Jeremy Kovach. Please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Catherine Myers. I'm a former high school English teacher, the daughter of a teacher, the spouse of a teacher, and the mother of a teacher. I'm also the co-executive director of Live More, Screen Less. On behalf of Minnesota students and educators, thank you for this comprehensive bill supporting our students and teachers. For the past 4 years, Live More, Screen Less has had conversations with educators and students across the state. We begin by asking about the benefits and the drawbacks of technology. The benefits are pretty easy to describe: communication, ease of information, and entertainment. And the drawbacks are sometimes heartbreaking. From students, we have heard seeing inappropriate images, being distracted from homework, wishing they had paper and pencil homework, that devices are escape from reality and a portal and a prison. For educators commenting on the drawbacks of technology in the classroom, they cite instant access to an abundance of negative influences, monitoring students while online, distractions, academic dishonesty. Most dramatically, technology has stolen my joy of teaching, and device use is creating a chasm in student and teacher relationships. Members, there is no well-being without digital well-being. As we know, the mental health of our teens is in crisis, yet they do not want to listen to adults telling them how to manage their devices. We have successfully built resources and digital well-being educator training, along with peer leadership programs that train older students in digital well-being practices that can be shared with younger peers. Lawmakers, in your 100-page report, I urge you to find a place for programs and services of digital well-being that ensure that there will be student and educator well-being, because there is digital well-being. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up is Jeremy Kovach.
Madam Chair and members, thank you for your time and attention as I outline several items in the governor's budget plan.
Excuse me for 1 minute. Could you please state your name for the record?
Yes.
Thank you.
Jeremy Kovash, Minnesota Service Cooperatives. Outline several items in the governor's budget plan on which the Minnesota Service Cooperatives stand ready to assist. My name is Jeremy Kovash, and I am the Executive Director of Lakes Country Service Cooperative in Fergus Falls, Minnesota, and serve as the Legislative Chair for the Minnesota Service Cooperatives. This year, I also have the honor of serving as the Minnesota Association of School Administrators Legislative Finance Committee Chair. Authorized by Minnesota statute as regional service cooperatives for our members, we provide a comprehensive range of educational and administrative programs and services to every school district in the state of Minnesota. For more than 50 years, we have partnered with our members to bring equity and opportunity to our regions. Specifically, to the governor's budget plan, the Minnesota Service Cooperatives are well positioned to assist with several initiatives. One, bold literacy. This is a space where the service cooperatives, through regional centers of excellence, have a presence and can continue to ensure implementation of new literacy training in our smallest school districts. Two, MTSS. Utilizing the service cooperative's statewide footprint, we can help bring the MTSS framework forward to our schools. To guide and support continuous improvement in districts and schools, the MTSS framework describes the elements of an effective educational system designed to ensure the positive social, emotional, behavioral, developmental, and academic outcomes for every student. Three, CTE expansion. While the governor has one-time funding included, we're also hoping the committee will take a closer look at our CTE consortia grants as we look to broaden their reach, which are found in House File 2042. Four, expansion of rigorous coursework funds. We could expand graduate tuition offerings for concurrent enrollment teachers with these funds, building on the existing concurrent enrollment partnership and the 18 online program. Five, proposed expansion of Grow Your Own programs, paid student teaching and mentoring. To assist teachers and school systems to increase diversity and opportunities for new staff, including service cooperatives and other educational cooperatives as named partners. Six, special education separate sites and programs. Building on previous one-time grants for Setting 4 programs, these funds will support needed mental health services at our cooperative Setting 4 programs, supporting our highest need students and staff who serve them. We'd also like to give the committee and Representative Purcell thanks for hearing our facilities bill on cooperative facilities earlier in the session as well, House File 1457.
And if you could finish up.
Got
Thank
it.
You.
In closing, the Minnesota Service Cooperatives stand ready to fulfill the needs of Minnesota schools and assist the state with high quality, much needed regional delivery of services. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks for your testimony. Our next testimony is virtual, and it should be Seth Poots. Seth, could you please state your name for the record?
Yep, Madam Chair, members, I'm Seth Poots, Building and Grounds Director for Lake of the Woods Public School. Greetings from the walleye capital of the world. I'm speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Educational Facilities Management Professionals Association, also known as MASMAS, which is a group of over 700 individuals working in facilities, grounds, health, and safety operations for Minnesota K through 12 and higher education. We are committed to promoting excellence in the operation and care of educational facilities. We support eliminating the fund gap for deferred maintenance revenue between the alternative facility districts and those with capped amounts of long-term facility maintenance revenue, or LTFMR. That funding gap is $406 per pupil today and slated to grow to $495 per pupil by fiscal year 2025 if nothing changes. We know closing this gap is a tall order to do in one state budget cycle, but we're pleased to see a modest increase in the governor's education plan found in HF 2497. The $110,000 per district increase for the 299 LTFM schools is appreciated, And for Lake of the Woods School, that would mean a great deal for a school district in a small community with a declining enrollment. We also appreciate the inclusion of roofs, parking lot, and sidewalk repairs in the health and safety program. This will greatly assist us with our 10-year facility plans and staying current on these projects. Taken together along with the other deferred maintenance, debt service equalization, and safe school bills, forward progress can be made this session. Thank you for your time and consideration of our perspectives today.
Great. Thanks for your testimony. Next up is Matt Shaver. Please state your name for the record.
Chair Clarity, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Matt Shaver. I'm the policy director at EdAllies. We advocate for policies that increase access to a rigorous and engaging education in Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House File 2497. Thank you, Chair Joachim, for carrying the bill. I'm excited to share our support for many student-centered gap-addressing proposals in the governor's finance bill, as well as provide some feedback. We strongly support the proposals in bold literacy and want to thank the Department of Education and the governor for choosing to be pretty bold in working to address the unacceptable outcomes and disparities we see with reading in the state. Teachers deserve training and resources and evidence-based practices for how students learn best to read and how best to teach children to read. We also support establishing uses for literacy incentive aid starting on line 36.3 to put guardrails around its usage that are aligned to best practices. At a structural level, it likely isn't a good idea to be generating and distributing school funding based on standardized assessment scores. Literacy incentive aid is the one component of our school funding apparatus that does just that, and counterintuitively provides less money per pupil for school districts struggling to teach students to read, making it more difficult to improve those outcomes. Making lasting and sustainable improvements to reading instruction in Minnesota means we should utilize this annual $45 million literacy appropriation effectively. Establishing uses is just one half of that coin. We encourage decision makers to rethink how we generate and distribute this funding so we can use it as a lever to ensure all students have access to strong literacy instruction. We're also glad to see the governor continue to prioritize additional resources for students experiencing poverty to stay at the site in which they are generated. The proposal to increase the amount of compensatory revenue that must be used at the school the student attends on line 6.22 is a no-cost way of making sure those resources are actually used for the students who generate them. We also support funding alternatives to exclusionary practices, discipline practices on lines 50.7, which will make these shifts well-resourced reforms rather than just policy changes. We do see a missed opportunity to fund high-dosage tutoring to address missed learning due to the pandemic and help students catch up. Competitive tutoring grants would provide students additional supports and ensure that access to tutoring would not continue to be mostly privatized and inaccessible to many students. Finally, we want to highlight the proposal to provide funding to expand access to rigorous coursework for underrepresented students on line 45.23. We want to push on this idea by proposing the establishment of automatic enrollment policies similar to Washington State as a way to maximize this investment. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today, Chair Clarity, and thank you all for your public service to our state.
Thank you. Thanks for your testimony. Our next testifier is remote, and it's Jason Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jason Berg, and I'm the Superintendent of Schools for Farmington Area Public Schools. As I look at House File 2497, I'm reminded that the last major change in our education system came well over 125 years ago when schools were organized by age, ability, and subject. We cannot ignore this organizational structure was designed around efficiency in a time when the future was very predictable. We have made some incremental changes since then, but nothing of significance. The last 3 years have shown us that the future is anything but that. When we look at things like ChatGPT, the exponential change that we are experiencing is only going to accelerate. We need a system that is agile enough to respond to these changes. I believe the personalized competency-based education piece of this bill opens the door for systematic change needed to excellently serve each learner based on their uniqueness. We hear a lot about innovation in education, but innovation does not improve on current practice or best practice. It makes a break, it takes a leap, and sets an entirely new course. Innovation is about culture and unleashing our staff to think differently around learning design. The culture of innovation is developing mindsets, processes, and tools that support staff in bringing ideas to practice. The compliance-based model from over 125 years ago still runs deep in our current system. Districts must be provided the opportunity to continue to improve on what has worked while simultaneously investigating better, more engaging ways to serve each learner. If we truly want to impact positive change, we need to provide staff time and opportunities to think differently. Redesigning learning experience through the lens of competency-based personalized learning provides a mechanism for that. Farmington Area Public Schools was part of the original innovation pilot project with Spring Lake Park in 2012. The original idea was to allow districts to move beyond traditional educational practices and develop truly innovative learning plans specific to the needs of the learners within our district, identify barriers to learning design, and work with the commissioner of the Department of Education to mitigate those barriers. Even though the how of both districts look different, focuses on the same elements of learning design, high-quality instruction for each learner, and personalized learning supports for each learner. These two focal points led both districts to the same endpoint, a competency-based approach. I think we would all acknowledge that the skills such as time management, workflow management, self-advocacy, and creative critical thinking are essential if our learners are going to create their own successful futures. We need a learning design structure supported by MDE and statute that elevates these attributes and dispositions.
Thank you for your testimony. If you could just finish.
Yep. I can finish in 3 seconds. Yep. Perfect. The competency-based personalized portion of this bill will allow districts to take the necessary steps to engage in that design if they want to. If we truly want to impact systematic change, it needs to start with the learner, and competency-based learning does just that. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next testifier is Marcy Dout, and then after her would be Mark Jansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Marcy Dout, and I'm the Superintendent of Intermediate School District 287. We serve 11 member districts in the West Metro, and today I'm speaking in recommendation of Article 4, Section 8, Special Education, Separate Sites and Programs Aid. This additional aid is critical to our students in federal setting four programs, not only in cooperatives and intermediates, but also traditional school districts. One of our programs is a Fed setting four. We serve students in kindergarten to age 21. And that means that our students are in a separate school away from general education peers. For a student to be placed in a federal setting four program, it means that they need more support than what their school or district was able to provide. And because our rules require least restrictive environment, we know that less special education services were not effective to meet the students' needs. The narrative that the Minnesota Department of Education provided indicated that our per pupil costs are more, and some people may say, why? It's because of our staffing ratio. And so our students express themselves both physically they can cause self-harm as well as harm to others. And so our ratios are much different. We also provide significant mental health services. Some students need therapy throughout the day. So we need social workers, psychologists at a different level than a traditional district. And we also have students that are complex. They may have a neurological disorder, mental health need, physical need, and nursing services all in one and throughout the day. And so the staffing support is significant. The second most expensive thing is that all of our students need some sort of assistive technology to access their educational materials. Assistive technology could be anything from a visual to an augmentative communication device. And lastly, if you notice your gas prices, transportation, special transportation is significant. And so especially if you are out state, to get to a federal setting four program would be very costly. Prior to becoming superintendent of an intermediate district, I was an assistant director of special education. And I just want to acknowledge and thank Governor Walz and his team for right-sizing the inequity of special education funding in intermediates. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. Mark Johnson, please state your name for the record. Jansen, I'm sorry.
So, good morning, Madam Chair and members of the Educational Finance Committee. My name is Mark Jansen, and I'm the Regional Director of the Northwest Metro Region of the Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs. I'm also the principal of Knights Academy ALP and STMA Online Schools, both located in St. Michael, part of the STMA School District. The Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs is an organization that advocates for, supports, and promotes alternative learning programs in Minnesota. We have over 800 members from over 300 alternative learning programs around our state. Our programs strive to meet the needs of nearly 150,000 Minnesota students who experience difficulty in traditional classrooms and receive alternative educational services. Funding for alternative programs has lagged in recent years, as all education funding has. We strongly support the governor's proposal to increase general education formula by spending 6% over fiscal year 24-25. We also support the governor's proposal to allocate $50 million for a one-time grant program to improve building security and cybersecurity. Many of our students are from vulnerable populations, and this funding could allow us to improve our facilities and keep our students secure. Additionally, as you consider a biennial educational budget, we have two asks. We ask that you consider reinstating the extended time revenue to 1.5 ADM, or average daily membership, to fund school districts, charter schools, and other educational entities for at-risk students outside the traditional school year schedule. Our students often need more time and attention than students in traditional schooling. As a result, we have additional funding needs. We also ask that you include HF 203, a $50,000 grant to the MAP STARS program. MAP STARS is an effective program that helps students in alternative settings develop professional employment, academic, and social skills through participation in statewide trainings and conferences. This funding would support the STARS, student organizations, employment, and citizenship activities. Thank you again for this opportunity to testify.
Thanks for your testimony. We have two, our next two are remote. First is Dr. Bernadia Johnson. You may please state your name for the record.
You may proceed. Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Dr. Bernadia Johnson. I am currently an associate professor of educational leadership at Minnesota State University, Mankato. Prior to that, I was a superintendent of Minneapolis Public Schools, a principal, and most importantly, a teacher. I've always known the importance of reading, especially for the children in my community. I'm speaking today on House 52497. We've all heard the numbers. Our NAEP scores have dropped. The MCA results acknowledge that only 28% of our black students are meeting proficiency in reading in third grade. I think we can all acknowledge there's a problem. Actually, probably a number of problems. But what the bold literacy plan stands to do is provide a clear pathway and resources to ensure students will learn to read so they can then learn read to learn. I've heard some concerns that the science of reading, which is really the body of literature that informs the ways in which we teach beginning readers, is somehow not culturally responsive. It is hard for me to understand this argument. Do I think we should use culturally and linguistically responsive pedagogy, as Dr. Lanson Billings and Lisa Delpit outlined in the early 90s? Yes. Do I think we should ensure there is, as Professor Goldie Muhammad would argue, joy in reading? Yes. I also believe that we must also teach our skills to our youngest learners, skills needed to decode words to be able to read, as do all three of the black female researchers I just mentioned, and stop getting distracted by detours that take us down the wrong road, which suggests that teaching explicit reading instruction is not culturally responsive. Let me be clear. We need to ensure our students get both sound reading instruction grounded in sound research and humanizing and validating instruction that ensures students learn about their peoples, histories, and genius. In addition to all these positions, I forgot to mention one of the most important ones, grandmother. My grandson Bennett is in kindergarten, and he is learning to read. He's so proud of himself and filled with joy. Every student deserves that. The governor's bold literacy plan seeks to make that a reality. In conclusion, I can't accept that our children are not capable, and I challenge all who say they are anti-racist leaders to stop talking and start doing. In order to change the trajectory of achievement for our students, to want for other people's children what we want for our own, what I want for Bennett, to learn to read and enjoy reading. Thank you for listening and learning from my experiences.
Thank you, Dr. Johnson. Our next testifier is Melissa Sonic. Could you please state your name for the record?
And begin. Yes, my name is Melissa Sonic, and I get to be the assistant superintendent for Roseville Area Schools. Good morning from Cabo. If you can hear the waves, enjoy them. Every reading teacher that I know gives everything that they have every day to help students learn to read. I know this about reading teachers because I identify as a reading teacher. My background is in K-6 literacy. And that is part of what makes learning about the science of reading so hard. It actually requires me to unlearn. When I started learning about the science of reading, I pushed back and I disagreed. Because if the research was right, then what I knew about reading was no longer true. And that messed with my identity as a teacher. And more so, it meant that maybe I had underserved students who I cared so deeply about. There are a few findings in the research that I'd like to highlight today. The ability to read is the social justice issue of our time. Reading equity starts with teachers being taught the science of reading. Along with having large gaps in reading proficiency, we also have large gaps between research and practice. The research is clear. The best approach to teach reading includes explicit instruction of phonemic awareness, phonics, fluency, vocabulary, and comprehension strategies. And even though data shows the science of reading is effective, this conclusion has not yet been widely adopted in practice in public schools across the nation. And that's where you and the Bold Literacy Plan come in. Support from the state will be essential, specifically to fund educator training, literacy screening, assessment, and curriculum. We need to allocate the funds needed so all educators across the state of Minnesota can access the science of reading. My hope and dream is that if we do, instead of 50% of students reading proficiently at the end of third grade, 95% of our students will be proficient readers. And if anyone can make that happen, it is the leaders sitting in this room today. There's a lot of kids out there counting on us to get it right. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. And our final testimony today will be from Eric Olson. Please state your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and fellow representatives. My name is Eric Olson. I'm the proud superintendent of Monticello Public Schools. Today I'm speaking in behalf of continued and increased support of MTSS, Multiple Tiered Systems of Support. In Monticello School District, we have long been proud of our clearly defined why, every kid, every day. That's been our creed, our reason for showing up every day, a well-intentioned goal of meeting the needs of every student in each of our buildings each day. For years we've strived for this. I'd like to think we often hit the mark, but there's no question we've missed it too. And each time we evaluated our reasons for missing the mark, we came back to a pretty simple conclusion. We had our why, but where was our clearly defined how for getting there? We've had different forms of multiple tiered systems of support in our buildings for about 15 years, but there was no uniformity, no common language, and truly not even a unified understanding of what high quality MTSS framework really was. Without funding or personnel, our ability to implement and operate an MTSS plan with fidelity was limited to non-existent. We were doing so many of the things we needed to be doing, but little was connected throughout our district. We were tackling problems individually rather than through systematic solutions, wasting time, energy, and resources chasing our tail instead of getting in front of the problems at last. When we began to access the Minnesota MTSS program back this past year, bringing in personnel and funds to truly implement an umbrella system across our district, we began to see immediate impacts. This programming has become our how, providing a stable foundation for us to continue to achieve our what and our why. Educational excellence for every kid, every day. Through MTSS, we have had the opportunity to collaborate with 11 other school districts. We have developed connections and partnerships with MDE staff members who have been instrumental in moving us forward. And we have established MTSS framework that we're fully confident will stand the test of time. We have structures for student interventions. We have more clearly identified handbooks and guidebooks. And we have support for our educators like we have never before had. I'd like to thank the leadership of Gene Duffy and MDE Compass Cohort Leadership Team at the state level. The continued funding for building systems of support for our children across the district is going to be imperative as the state continues its effort to support the specific academic and social emotional needs of all children. Thank you. Sorry Great. For the your time there.
Thanks for your testimony, Mr. Olson. As we move to questions for House File 2497, I'd like to invite MDE back up to the table for some questions. And then also, just so everyone knows, we do have permission to go past 12 o'clock, so we will have a hearty discussion. Our first question, our first person that signed up is Lead Tricia.
You can move me to the end.
Representative Sensormira.
Yeah, thank you. My question is, actually what was just addressed in the last testimony, the multi-tiered systems of support. I guess I have two questions about this. You know, one is I'm still trying to get a sense of where the funding for this goes. You know, I think we just heard from a superintendent that talked about how great it was going, and so generally anything that schools are telling me is working, I'm inclined to fund. But I still would love to just get a better sense of, is this staff at MDE to support this? Is it building staff that is doing, you know, kind of creating these systems? Where does the funding for it go? And then a question, this actually might be for Chair Joachim. It sounds like there's some overlap and similarities with a bill that you brought for the Bar Center. Can you kind of talk about, are these two programs complementary? Are they different approaches? So two questions. Thank you.
Assistant Commissioner Burnham, you may begin.
Madam Chair, thank you for the question. It's a little bit of both. So the current funding that's supporting the MTSS work right now was through our ARPA funds. So we have basically one staff member on loan from us, from a service co-op who is leading and managing the multi-tiered systems of support work through Compass right now. And what this proposal does is expand that work across the state. We also used ARPA funds to provide grants to districts. And with those grants, they use it in multiple ways, because multi-tiered systems of support focuses on multiple layers, not only of instruction, but assessment and data literacy, family and community engagement, and just looking at the services being provided to meet the needs of all the learners. So the current proposal is an expansion of those grants, as well as an expansion of the partnership we have with the Minnesota Service Cooperatives to have more staff focused in those regions on the implementation of MTSS, as well as the establishment of a math network similar to what we're proposing for a literacy network. So there's money in this Compass MTSS proposal currently to focus on math in addition to the literacy work that we're doing in partnership with the regional service cooperatives.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner. Rep?
Yeah, I'm wondering if Chair Joachim could answer the second part of the question about how does this, is it complement, is it overlap with the Bar Center bill that you had?
Chair Joachim?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Sensormira, for asking about that. The Bar Center focuses on some more of the training within the schools, very specific with the data dive. The MTSS is a framework that all our districts can use to do some of that same work, but really focusing on literacy, math, community engagement with the parents, and it's the fourth one that I always forget. I'm a big fan. You think I'd have this memorized. Mental health. So it's social emotional learning, mental health, working with our families, and then also the math and the literacy. So it's a framework districts can use to kind of figure out and get help through the cooperatives and how to connect all those pieces within the schools instead of reinventing the wheel every single time. And then the Bar Center can come in and work with them individually to help with like the teacher training and to look at the specifics of their individual students. So it kind of complements each other.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. Is there a follow-up?
Yeah, so could the, I guess maybe this is for the MDE staff, could the funding for MTSS go towards Bar, you know, partnering with Bar Center?
Executive Director.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we also have $2 million in our Compass MTSS proposal to support BAR. We see the work that they do, especially around the social, emotional, mental health piece, as serving a key component of the Minnesota MTSS model. And so that $2 million is ongoing funding for them to continue their implementation work throughout the state.
Thank you. Great. Representative Hudela.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Madam Chair, for bringing the bill forward. Big investment in education. I think everyone in the room here today wants that. I think we need to put funding in a lot of places. I don't really have a question per se, just want to make a comment. Just some ongoing concerns with nonprofits and fraud, and I know we're standing up a new IG department within MDE that will look to oversee this. It's concerning to me that the amount of auditors that were employed by MDE in the past have not done more to catch fraud related to education. Auditors have a fiduciary responsibility. If they detect fraud, they do fraud surveys on the front end of most audits. It's just surprising that we didn't get more into the feeding our future scandal as far as detection, and I'm concerned that 10 new FTEs kind of under that same umbrella isn't going to have a big impact. And part of that is, as we've gone through committee the last couple months, and I've pointed out just a couple of them, there's still a number of nonprofits out there that are potentially receiving taxpayer appropriations, yet there's some major issues within those groups as far as tax filings that aren't correct, tax violations as far as not having their employee identification numbers going along with donation mechanisms on their website, and a whole host of other things. So I would just encourage the department to police that up within those organizations, and I really look forward to, before this omnibus comes, before the floor, just looking into all the nonprofits to make sure that our taxpayer dollars in education are being spent wisely. So thank you.
Thanks, Rep. Hudela. Chair Yukim, would you like to make
some
comments?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'll say a few words and then toss it over to Mr. Cordy. But I want to thank Representative Hudela for taking that deeper dive. Sometimes we don't do that, and as we learned from the OLA report, we need some work in this area, especially around the legislative-directed grants. The competitive grant process OLA found a little bit more comprehensive, but to do that, we need bodies. And as you heard today, while there's auditors at the MDE, they don't have the investigatory power. So I will turn it over to Mr. Cordy to maybe expand on that.
Great. Could you please state your name for the record again?
Sure. Thank you. Again, Darren Cordy, Assistant Commissioner at MDE. Madam Chair and Representative, I really appreciate the conversation. And I don't think that we're trying to skirt the issue around, you know, what happened with Feeding Our Future. We're trying to really get to a place where we're not relying upon other partners to help us with that work, but we're able to do that ourselves. And I know you mentioned auditors, and yes, we do have a handful of auditors, but auditing is not the same as conducting a fraud investigation. It's one thing to be able to identify, to do the you know, things that you submitted line up with the bookkeeping that we have, but it's another thing to be able to uncover criminal intent, which we were not able to do as part of our work at MDE, and it really slowed our ability to be able to intervene in that case as a result of the court investigation that was happening and the orders we were receiving from the judge at that time. So we really feel like this piece is going to help us there, and that is going to give us more insight into the programs, and particularly with those, as I mentioned, non-governmental entities, nonprofits, et cetera. So yes, excited to continue to have that conversation with you.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner Corte. Was there a follow-up? Okay, next question is Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Joachim, and to the Governor's Office for all of your work. This is, I think most of the things in your bill are great and will probably line up really well with the House's position. I just want to thank you for the cross-subsidy funds that you put in there and also the special education extra funding for schools. I think that's really important as the superintendent of 287 had testified to. I also want to talk about the READ Act and Bold Literacy and how those two really do complement each other in that work. And I'm really looking forward to merging those two in the weeks ahead. So thank you so much.
Great, thank you. I wasn't hearing a question, more of a comment. So I'm moving on to Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to all the testifiers who were here remotely and drove down. Thank you for bringing the bill. I think there's a number of really important components in this bill. And Representative Fudella addressed it, but just a significant investment in education. And I really see it as an investment in our students, in our next generation. So I think that's really important. The CTE pieces, the personalized competency-based education, we've talked about that in committee, and really giving schools local control on how they address things is very welcomed. The Bold Literacy Plan, I would echo what some of our testifiers said, Dr. Johnson and the superintendent who is in Cabo. Can we just recognize that? But also just think about the dedication for that superintendent. She's on vacation in Cabo, and she took time to testify today. So shout out to her. I am a little jealous and envious. I will recognize that. But I would just say, let's stop playing games and name the science of reading. That's what our testifier said. Let's just do it. I continue to have significant concerns with the non-exclusionary discipline. And I continue to hear that even this morning as I was at school talking with our staff. There's concern. There's concern from our schools that they are not going to be able to handle their classrooms, that principals will not be able to handle the school, and that will continue to drive people away from education. I have major concerns with that. And I would just ask the department to think about who actually has experience with school discipline. It's our building principals. Let's engage them. They, through MESPA, through the Secondary Principals Association, they have reached out. They've offered feedback, but that feedback has not been heard. So I would encourage us to do that, because they're the ones that actually will be the ones facing the parents, the community, who are upset with schools being out of control. I would echo Representative Fudella's concerns about the Office of Inspector General, and I think I come at it from a little different perspective, because while the department wasn't able to monitor fraud, school staff, I know in my district and across the state, were actually bringing meals to kids' doors. They were dropping meals off to ensure that families had it. So I would challenge the department, instead of working, what I wish would have happened during that time, instead of working remotely, I wish the department would have gone out and actually checked on some of these sites to check and see if there's actually people living in that, or that storefront is actually a site, a distribution site. We don't need auditors. We don't need to grow government to do that. We just need people to take the initiative to get up and drive out to the site to see if that's actually a site. I think this is unacceptable, and I think this is just growing more government. And that's really the largest concern. And Dr. Foucault, who I worked with, is over here. We were both district assessment coordinators early in our career. And there was a joke that actually came from the Department of Education, and it started, they would start our district assessment coordinator meetings with, "We're the department and we're here to help." And everyone would chuckle and laugh, but that was almost 20 years ago, and that mentality hasn't changed. And I would just highlight Superintendent Berg's testimony when he talked about personalized competency-based education. Look at what happened when we got out of the way as government and we said to local school districts, have at it. Have the freedom to innovate, to get creative, because they came up with things that were fantastic for their schools, fantastic for their kids, fantastic for their communities. So let's get out of the way and let's have less mandates and let's let our local schools do what they do best, innovate at the local level. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Rep. Bakeberg. Chair Joachim, did you want to comment?
Oh, no, just I wanted to thank Representative Bakeberg for his time in schools and all our members around the table that have spent time in schools because their experience really is invaluable. And I look forward to us doing some really good work in building on what the governor's budget is here. I'm very excited about the CTE CTE opportunity is what I should say. And just touch base a little bit more on I know there's some concerns still around non-exclusionary discipline, but we also have accountability to our students. And I do want flexibility for our school systems as well. And I've toured the Farmington schools and the competency-based education, which I think is unique, and they've started some good things down there. But we also want to make sure that we have accountability to our individual students that may not fit into that system. And there's possibilities within the structure right now to be able to do that. I worry about some things that I hear, like, I think Farmington was the one that testified that said they were doing credit-bearing classes before school when there was no transportation that was available to all students. So we also have a responsibility here at the legislature to make sure all of our kids have their needs met. And I think part of that and part of what's going to help also, and it was actually just some scientific research that was just talked about on NPR this morning when it comes to universal meals, when it comes to meeting our students' mental health issues, when it comes to meeting their specific needs, those will go much, very far and very long way to helping address some of the issues we're seeing in behavior in our districts. So I think it's a yes and. And I think when we're asking MDE to do investigative work and they don't have investigators, that is important to hire those as well. So look forward to a more comprehensive discussion around the Office of Inspector General and how that can be structured to make sure that, as Representative Hudela said, that our non-governmental entities that are getting money are doing what they're supposed to. And I know that our districts do a very good job with getting doing what they need to do with the money we're giving them. We just have to make sure we're giving them enough to do their job. And then also making sure that we're keeping our students' needs focused in this discussion at all times. So thank you.
Thanks, Chair Joachim. Mr. Odie, did you have a comment?
Madam Chair, again, for the record,
state your name for the record.
I don't believe I've introduced myself here in the committee today. My name is Ado Shuni. I'm the Director of Government Relations to the Minnesota Department of Education. And I just wanted to provide a little bit of context for some of the comments and questions earlier, well taken from Representative Bakeberg around engagement for our non-exclusionary discipline proposals. The proposals in the policy package the department has come forward with and shared with legislators for probably 4 or 5 years, and the growing recognition that, for lack of a better phrasing, we need to put our money where our mouth is, has led to more proposals around investments in this space to provide professional development, to provide training, to provide other resources on the ground for our administrators and for our educators to be able to implement these policies. And 2 years ago, we came forward with some grant proposals. The legislature funded a small amount to put out grants to districts and charters to implement these policies. We used some federal ARP funds in this space. And this year, we're seeing in the governor's bill a larger proposal to fund more opportunities for districts and charters to implement these policies. And I think also to Representative Bakeberg's point, we are a continuous improvement agency. We always have room to grow in terms of our outreach and our connections with our practitioners in the field. And we've heard loud and clear from legislators, from chairs of, please start connecting more and more on these policies with our administrators, with our educators. We have been engaging with practitioners through the principals organization, through the teachers organization, had some roundtables. Those are not just one and done. These are continuous conversations should these policies and funding opportunities go through that we continue to want to engage in. Again, continuous improvement organization. I think One of the great things that we've seen in this session that we haven't seen in prior sessions is I think there's more engagement in some of our proposals, which are now allowing us to delve deeper into some of these proposals that have been on the table for a couple of years, which then kind of shines a light on, hey, we have some work to do, especially when it comes to engaging practitioners. So that's very well taken. I think, Representative Della, to your point around the resources at the department, I think Chair Youakim added to that. I appreciate that around our ability to make sure that the taxpayers' funds are implemented, especially with our grantees, whether they be LEAs or nonprofits, is done with fidelity, is a good one and well taken. And one of the things I think you're going to see across our grant opportunities that we're providing here is asking for those administrative funds to be able to do it right. We take the OLA's report around grant management very seriously. I think you heard from our CFO, Janice Anderson, around all the activities that we're engaged in around training, around IT, and resources that we want to put forward to meet each and every one of those points that the OLA made, but also to have the staffing resources to be able to meet what the taxpayer deserves around meeting the OGM policies, as well as being able to monitor the outcomes that we expect from the from the investments that the state is making in these opportunities and proposals. So we hope to join together to be able to properly resource the department's ability to oversee these grants, as well as through the specific proposals around the OIG and around the audit and internal controls proposals.
Thank you, Mr. Oney. Our next question is Representative Anderson.
I'll pass since we're running out of time.
We do have permission to go over 12 or past 12 o'clock. So if you'd like to ask your question, go ahead.
All right. Sorry. I do have questions, and I know we're pounding on the Inspector General. And it's true, auditors don't have supposed investigatory authority, but they do in the sense that, you know, the department, all state departments, if they have any suspicion of wrongdoing, are required to report it to a particular agency. In this case, it's the legislative auditor and the attorney general. I believe that Assistant Commissioners of Burnham, that you testified even after the FBI was doing their investigation, that you had no reason to suspect any fraud. Is that correct?
Commissioner Cordy?
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, yes, there was, as you were aware, or perhaps the committee was not fully aware, we were under a pretty contentious lawsuit at that time with Feeding Our Future. They were very aggressive with us in court in terms of pressing what our ability was to curtail their activities. As part of that, I was personally named in that lawsuit as defaming Feeding Our Future and the Pioneer Press. And so to be perfectly honest about litigation strategy, I had to be very careful about what I said in that deposition. You know, while we had our suspicions, fraud is a criminal act, and mm-hmm. we didn't have the ability to prove that at that point. That was in the hands of the FBI. And they had not yet announced indictments, charges, search warrants, or anything at that point. So yes, that's accurate. That was my testimony at that time.
Thank you, Commissioner Cordy. Representative Anderson, follow-up.
Madam Chair, so your Office of Inspector General, you have 10 FTEs. What do you have a plan for that? Is that going to group, essentially, going to be looking at all the nonprofit and outside groups, grants, results, projects? I guess what's the plan?
Sure. Madam Chair, Representative Anderson.
Commissioner
yes.
Cordy.
I'm sorry. That's a great question. The office would certainly, I think our goal would be to get an experienced person who has worked in that type of environment before and help us provide and build up that office. But certainly it would be taking a look at all of our education programs, both state and federal, that we administer. Our focus would be on some of those more high-dollar programs, but then, as you mentioned, those that we deal with non-governmental entities. It's worth pointing out that in the nutrition issues that we had, and no piece or part of that were schools involved at all. They did a fantastic job during the pandemic, as well did a number of perfectly legitimate and hardworking nonprofits that were out there as well, so helping us kind of separate. Those two will certainly be part of it. And I'm glad that you mentioned efficiencies as well, too. That is certainly a role of the Inspector General at some of our other state departments, as well as the U.S. Department of Education. So we would expect that as they're looking at how programs are administered and is there fraud and misuse, that they'd also be able to help us identify some efficiencies as well in terms of how we operate programs and potentially create some cost savings within our programs.
Thank you. Representative Anderson, follow up.
Okay,
great. We also have a question from Representative Ream.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's more of a comment than a question, but really excited to see that the student teacher stipend is included in this governor's proposal. I think it's really important, and I believe we had a testifier, Laura Mogelson, who spoke to that. I think if we want to make sure that we have enough teachers, and in a very tight labor market that we're in right now, we really need to make sure that, you know, when they're student teaching, they get paid for that. You know, I don't know of any other job where you work and don't get paid. So really excited to see that. And that was my comment. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Ream. Two more questions, and that's Representative Sensenmiehrer and then Representative Kreisha. So thank Representative Sensenmiehrer.
Thank you. Mine is more of a comment as well, and I'll try to keep it brief. So I think there's a lot of really important conversations going on right now about reading, as we all know. But something that I like to highlight within the debate is that I think half of the literacy debate is often left out, which is about writing. You know, so I went and I did a control F find of how many times writing was mentioned in this verse, how many times reading. So writing was mentioned 11 times versus reading was mentioned 96 times. I was happy to see some mention of writing. You know, before I came to the legislature, I worked at for an organization that was focused specifically on supporting students with developing their writing skills. And something that we talked about was reading provides young people with access to other people's words, other people's truths, but writing provides young people power. It's the power to tell your own story, to tell your own narrative. And there's lots of research that shows that in our schools, students are just not getting any time to write. Students, I think starting in grade 3, are supposed to get 30 minutes a day for writing. They get nowhere near that amount of time. So I think as we continue the important conversations around literacy, trying to support districts in increasing our really abysmal literacy scores. I do think we need to think about, are students getting time? Are they getting access to writing instruction? I would like to see, you know, in the district literacy plans, there's no mention of asking districts to have any kind of plan for teaching writing or providing students with writing instruction. That's something I would like to see added. I was encouraged to see that on page 45 in the rigorous coursework section, there is the possibility within that funding to go towards creating writing centers at schools to ensure that students are able to have, you know, college-level writing skills. But I think that that's something that we need to be continuing to invest in. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sensenmiehrer. And our final question is to Lead Kreisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Madam Chair, for carrying the bill and for Commissioner and Mr. Ooney for being here, Deputy Commissioner. Just a couple, there's a lot of great things in here to be talking about, a lot of conversations, and that's where we start with to get to solutions. So I fully acknowledge that. Obviously, I know we have a lack of time, but I do want to, and I'm not going to rehash the comments, I do want to circle back just quickly to why the Feeding Our Futures and the fraud piece is so important. And Commissioner Cordy, I absolutely understand the stress and everything that must have been behind the scenes and all that. I've been in my own situations with those, and they're difficult with organizations. But I can't. It did happen, and I have to say this. This is the piece that I think we're waiting to see so that we can communicate, and that is in all the layers of bureaucracy that exist and all the layers of government, we have yet to see the responsibility and remorse from any individuals. Coming and actually just taking ownership and say, this happened, and we feel horrible about it. In my company, we have the put the badge on the table moment, whereas the sheriff puts the badge on the table and says, if I don't fix this, here's my badge and I'm walking away. I understand the protections and I understand behind the scenes and working with the governor's office to make sure all this happens. But frankly, the biggest thing that we've lost in this is a breakdown of trust and confidence. And I think that has permeated down through the governor's office, through the previous commissioners. And it's rebuilding that trust and, you know, looking for somebody to come in and say, it's not just that we're going to have 10 new positions. It's the culture is going to change. That when somebody sees this, it can rise to the top and we can stop this. And that somebody won't lose their job over it or somebody's afraid to bring this. That's what we're looking for is personal accountability and responsibility that's celebrated to say, this was wrong. You're right. Some people knew about this. Some people had warning signs. I know the people that work at the department, and when you know your job well, you know what signs to look for. My concern and what I'm looking for is how did that not get permeated fast enough to where action could have been taken? I don't know, and I'm not blaming. I'm just saying in the absence of information, what we do as humans, we fill those voids with our own ideas. And I want to make sure that I understand truly, truly what cultural changes will happen so that if the solution is new procedures, new people, and new processes, they have new roles, responsibility, and they have a new understanding that we're not going to allow this to happen again because it did erode the trust and erode the confidence. And the hard part of that is, and I know this has taken up a lot of oxygen and time in all the committees, but because that lack of confidence and trust exists, everything else is suspect. And that makes all those other harder conversations harder. And Chair Joachim, you have a very difficult job of putting your bill forward with all the things. And the overshadowing of this is, and I'll just ask it this way, because here's the question is, yeah, this is great. The governor's put all these, but is he really serious? Because all these other confidence and trust pieces are still in place. So just throwing that out, that's what people are looking for. Words matter, but actions are louder. So, and I believe that we have a new commissioner. I've met him. I believe he's sincere. I believe he has some great ideas. And I'm hoping to see that start to build some confidence as well. So I'll just leave it there. You have a huge job in front of you.
Commissioner Cordy, did you have a comment?
I would, Madam Chair and Representative Creech, I really appreciate those comments. And I do believe that there is culture change happening within MDE. We are learning from that experience and improving our services, our communication with other agencies and other partners. That being said, you know, we have still been stuck in a situation where we're relying on other folks to do the work that we feel need to be done. And so that's why we feel pretty strongly about having that in-house piece, but happy to continue that conversation with you as well.
Great. Lee Precia, a follow-up? Chair Yuki, would you like to speak? Any final words on House File 2497?
Chair Clardy, thank you. And it's okay to call me representative while I'm up here. That's why I hand over the gavel to you. Members, thank you for your questions and the discussion. I welcome continued conversation with the items in this bill. You may see more of them moving forward that we might not have had individual bills on. We have an opportunity this year to make a historic investment in our Minnesota schools. We can make sure that our school's learning environment works for all students and that our schools have the tools that they need to meet students where they're at. Many of the proposals in the governor's bill, along with the bills our committee is hearing and will continue to hear, help provide stability for our schools, support for our students, and provide opportunities for our students so that they're successful far into the future. Thank you, members, for your time and attention, and look forward to the good work we're going to do together.
Thank you, Chair Yuki. Thanks, Chair Yuakim. with that, the chair lays over House File 2497 for possible inclusion in the Education Finance Bill. And thanks for your hard work today. We are adjourned, and we're adjourned until noon. I'm sorry, we're adjourned at noon. 12:15.